It's those two assholes. Those two idiots you saw me talking to at the third rail.
Just he doesn't want to touch the third rail.
That's you've hit the third rail for sure.
That is the third rail, saying white people have interest.
Third rail. The third rail here is another wonderful show on the TRS network.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
It's the third rail. You will be destroyed.
Watch out for the third rail, baby. That's high voltage.
In the opinion of this reporter, if this nation, or in fact the world, ever needed heroes, that time is now. That time is now.
Like a cargo van full of teens trick-or-treating in the suburbs, this is happening. Episode 175. 175 of the most handsomest and viral podcast, The Third Rail. Hi, I'm your host, Bellerophon. And before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor. Today's episode is sponsored by the law firm of Pearson Rockwell. Have you or a loved one become addicted to Kazar Milkers? You may be entitled to damages. The state of Israel has negligently and irresponsibly released gene-stealing sirens into the civilized world, and you deserve compensation for the pain, suffering, and kvetching. Call today to join the class action lawsuit. All right, that shilling out of the way, let's introduce our panel. The man whose disdain for thoughts knows no bounds, Dark Enlightenment. Say hi, sir.
By Allah, they shall taste my shoe.
Both of them, if they really act up. The man whose people stole philosophy from the Kangs, Nikephoros.
Hey guys, how's it going?
And the man who claims that we're not in a simulation, we're just in a Star Trek holodeck, Borzoi.
So I'm dropping a haunted hyperpodcastism today. It never ends. You will be trapped listening to it forever. Ooh.
Imagine, if you will, a podcast that never ends. The philosophy keeps coming, hot and heavy, and starts almost immediately.
And afterwards, there were only one or two mics on the ground.
But that's just, but that's just another story in the Borzoi zone.
The joke here is that we're all in the Borzoi zone. We're not trapped in a podcast with you. Or wait, you're not trapped in a podcast with us. We're trapped in a podcast with you.
This is a Borzoi world. You're all just living in it.
You're all just listening to it.
Show title right there. You're all just listening to it.
You know, if you think about it, IRL is just one giant 80-year-long podcast. But lastly,
if we're gonna do front loading the show titles, I do want to get my nomination in. Because I feel right. Like I came up with a hot one last night, the nappy hollow weave.
That's
clever.
That's not bad. That's not bad. And as always, last introduction, our stalwart captain working the knobs and technology, TV's Frank.
Oh, it's just lighting the grill!
I feel like I cut off right there, because... usually that thing goes into talking about having a few beers, put on a barbecue, or I forget how exactly it goes, but kind of cut off.
Oh, right, it's now. Just lighting the grill, just waiting for you guys to come over, have a little barbecue, a little beer.
There we go, I knew it. I knew it wasn't the full thing.
Borzoi he's become so in tune with the simulation that he knows when the simulation is shortchanging him.
I just know
levels
that.
Of self-awareness.
I just like that drop.
I won't lie.
Or, you know, someone spent an enormous amount of time watching Aqua Teen Hunger Force stoned in college.
I never watched Aqua Teen Hunger Force until they started talking about it on TDS.
I feel slightly attacked by your content there, DE, but I'm choosing to take the high road and move on. All right. So just going, let's give a quick table of contents. So just going in order of what I see on my screen. Borzoi, what you got for us, brother?
My winner is Mike Tyson, my loser is the damn urbanite, and my topic is the tribe that bites. I figured I got some spooky Halloween content for people.
Very apropos. All right, and then DE, what you got for us, man?
My winner of the week is ammo manufacturers. My loser of the week is gun owners, and my... topic this week is the retail apocalypse.
Oh, poor moon cow. A lot of spooky beheadings going on where I am.
Oh.
Ooh. I mean, doesn't spooky imply that we don't know what's causing it? Like, this isn't some slasher film with...
What do you mean? We have no idea why this is happening.
I don't know if they're necessarily black Muslims.
All right, fair enough. Yeah, it could be any color of them, you know.
A nigger.
Oh man. All right, and then Nikkei, what you got for us, man?
We've got exorcisms on the rise. That's about it.
Oh man, I'm really digging the Halloween theme going on. Bring a little spook to the audience. And then lastly, you know, my winner for the week is MAGA rappers. All right. So I will admit, you know, just to keep in theme here, you know, start off with something a little spooky. You know, Nikkei, why don't we start off with yours, the bit about exorcisms? You know, lead us into that.
Hell yeah. We got from the AP, exorcism increasingly frequent. Including after U.S. protests. In popular culture, exorcism is often serves as a plot device in chilling films about demonic possession. This month, two Roman Catholic archbishops showed a different face of exorcism, performing the rite at a well-attended outdoor ceremonies to drive out any evil spirits lingering after acrimonious protests. The event's distinctive character gave a hint of how exorcism, with roots in ancient times, has evolved in some ways, as it becomes more commonplace in many parts of the world. In Portland, Oregon, Archbishop Alexander Sample led a procession of more than 200 people to the city park on October 17th, offered a prayer, then conducted a Latin exorcism rite intended to purge the community of evil. The event followed more than 4 months of racial justice protests in Portland. Mostly peaceful, but sometimes fueling violence and riots. On the same day, 600 miles to the south, San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore Cordeleon performed an exorcism ceremony outside of a Catholic church in San Rafael, where protesters had earlier toppled a statue of Father Junipero Serra. We pray that God mighty purify the place of evil spirits, that he may purify the hearts of those who perpetrated this blasphemy, Cordeleon said. He continued that the exorcism prayer is in Latin, remarking that Latin tends to be more effective against the devil because he doesn't like the language of the church.
I always question the theology of that, but I'm, you know what? I believe it. I'll believe it.
So that does raise the question, what language does the devil prefer?
Like, I'll give you one guess.
Like
Haitian Creole.
we're getting a lot of HH with pumpkins in the chat. Sieg Hollow Brothers HH.
The Archbishop Samson and... Archbishop Sample and Archbishop Cardellone are two of the best Roman Catholic bishops in the country. And what has happened is churches have been desecrated all over the country. You know, particularly statues of Junipero Serra, the saint who founded the Franciscan orders and the missions in California. You know, brought the true religion to these savages that were, you know, killing each other all the time, and civilized them and saved their souls. And of course, people hate that. So
now let me ask you this, Nikkei, because I don't want to ruffle any feathers for people. But do you think ancient Greek would also have the same effect?
Oh yeah, I believe that. You know, and I like it when other people believe it for their language. I think it's only right when you believe it for your own language. You know, it's only correct if it's an in-group preference.
Again, I'm not sure on the theology on that, but I choose to believe it.
Nah.
I'm 100% sure on the theology on that.
Well, the Orthodoxy is correct because my ancestors believed it.
Well, the funniest thing is I've been having discussions with one of my relatives, one of my boomer relatives, who is big Trump supporter and is definitely, he's not QAnon, but he's QAnon adjacent. And we got on the topic of the elites and the occult, and I told him, you know, because we were talking about, well, do they actually even believe this stuff or not? And what I told him was, it doesn't matter if they believe it or not. They act as if they do, and that's just as bad.
Right. Well, a couple things about this. Real talk for a second. The number of people under, say, 30 years old who've been properly baptized in the triune formula of, you know, I baptize you in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, as Christ himself commanded us in Matthew's Gospel and the Great Commission, is smaller every year. And the number of portals to demons that people are opening up, whether that's like weird occult shit, which don't do it, kids. Listen to Roscoe Walrus. Just don't mess with any of that stuff. It's bad. Okay? The number of people messing with that, the number of people addicted to, you know, like under demonic influence by pornography. Essentially, what you're seeing, like when you read the early church fathers and stuff, basically, I mean, there was just demons all over the ancient world all the time, and you were seeing that return. And, you know, like these cat ladies that have like had, you know, like, I'm sorry, man. Every time you have an abortion, you invite demons in. So these gals got haunted wombs, and they're insane, and they're under demonic oppression. And they need exorcisms. Like we need more exorcisms because our society is full of evil people.
More power to that bishop that's leading his flock right into that is the valley of the shadow of death right there, Portland.
No, it's a new rule. If your archbishop hasn't performed an exorcism in the last year, he's not based.
I will say too, you know, DE, you're talking about don't, you know, talking to the audience, don't be tempted to do this, you know, don't mess around with the occult. Like, listen, I know the, you know, you might be tempted to break out your Ouija board, try to red pill demons or what have you.
Yeah, maybe start an
end tower with the demon realm. But
all right, that would be kind of funny.
All right, DE back on board now.
I don't want to red pill them, but if they will spell out nigger with me, that's tempting. I rebuke the devil and all of his minions.
Well, I know the one form of demon portal that's Nikkei's hobby horse is the Netflix subscription. When you have a Netflix subscription,
yeah,
you've opened up a portal to the demon realm.
Satan wants to know, are you still watching?
That's right. Your saintly grandmother is disappointed. Turn off the Netflix.
But yeah, there is you know, not to get too esoteric, right? But you know, Dark, you're right on. You know, all these abominations, all of this evil stuff that people do on a regular basis. Like, you know, hell, if that's not you know, if an abortion is not turning a woman's body into a, you know, just walking, talking temple of Baal, you know, temple of child sacrifice, I don't know what the hell is. And
yeah, like you're a mobile Moloch station. You know, I mean, these women.
Imagine condemning your soul to hell because you're so edgy that you had to get a Ouija board out to spell the to do an N-word N-bomb with the spirits,
with legions of the damned. Yeah, no, I mean, this is I've always been a believing Christian, but the last few years have convinced me more than anything, particularly the way the left has acted. I mean, it's demons, fam. I hate saying it. Like I said it last week, but the arc of history is long, but it bends towards the vindication of Alex Jones. Like, these people, it's demons, international pedophiles, man. And as DeBorzo's point about, like, they believe it, okay? Like,
or they at least they act as if they do.
Right, which it doesn't matter, right? Like, oh, I am only worshiping these demons and sacrificing these children as a LARP. That doesn't really matter. Okay? You know, yeah, I thought it was funny to sacrifice these Haitian children to Moloch. Because,
the elites are just irony, bros. You know, it's just irony. It's just irony,
yeah,
bro.
No. You know,
I just sacrificed those children ironically.
Anton LaVey is like, I only worship Satan ironically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, while he's roasting in hell. Whether they believe it or not, they act as if, you know, here's the thing, man. You can sell your soul to the devil and not believe in the devil, but it doesn't matter. The devil believes in you. And, you know, to Nikkei's point, I mean, look around. look around and tell me that a society where everybody was, or basically everybody was baptized 100 years ago versus today, and tell me that like the demons aren't more prevalent. I'm sorry, I just, it does not pass the smell
test. Yeah, no. It's absolutely true.
Look up Ouija board on YouTube to find the endless Ouija board posting.
Ouija board?
Yeah, because
like, yeah, that's going Ouija over my head.
It's good because people call Luigi Ouija.
Ah, yes.
Mm. Yeah, sorry.
Speaking of Latin, my wife and I have been going to Latin services, and she really likes it. She doesn't have a Catholic background. She's got more of a Protestant background. But she's really liking the Latin services, the power of Latin. There is a power to Latin. I don't know what it is, whether it's just because it's the language of the Catholic Church, or if it's something else that's inherent within it, but there is something, or just maybe it's, ooh, spooky, exotic, but she really likes the Latin language.
It sounds cool.
Yeah.
It is.
Everything just sounds better in Latin.
It does.
What do you guys feel about Nazim Taleb's take that it's actually better if you don't know the language?
Well, considering
peasant killed.
Yeah, considering I'm a peasant Catholic and I am big on the anti-literacy train, and yeah, absolutely based.
Like you know your Paternosters and your Ave Marias and all that other stuff, but in terms of like there's a part of the Mass that's called the secret. And it's where the priest says something really quietly, and it's supposed to be like
it's like directly between the priest and God.
Exactly. And you're not supposed to know. Like you know, parts of the Roman canon, the part of the Mass where the priest turns the body the bread and wine into the body and blood of Christ. You know, parts of that are spoken really super quietly, and only like those up on the altar hear it, and then, you know, then the priest says something loud towards the end of it, to you know, announce to everyone, oh hey, now, you know, now this has been effectuated and it is transformed. But there's a lot of stuff like, you know, democracy sucks, and one of the ways it sucks is that people think that they're supposed to, like, they're entitled to know stuff. It's like, nah, man. Like, you're supposed to be in the pews, humble and praying and stuff, and, like, how much damage has been done by, like, literacy and, like, here's my theological opinion. Like, no, you're a moron. Stop talking.
Based von Bismarck says he whispers in Minecraft.
And a quick aside, how does one say table 43 in Latin, asking for a friend?
Tabula, I don't know my numbers.
43, you mean, Sam.
That's four, was it, yeah, it would be what, four X's and three I's?
43, you mean, Sam.
Or that right there. Man, Frank was quick on that one.
Well done, Frank, coming in with a save. Yeah, no, it is, you know,
XL1111.
Yeah. Here's one thing that is good, you know, in the wider sense of what these bishops are doing. They are acknowledging that they are at war with the secular leftists in their town, which too many people on the religious right were like, oh, we just disagreed. Like, no. The last few years have shown they hate you. You're at war with them.
And that's what I mean about when I say conservatives are the real moral relativists, because they have that perspective, whereas the other side actually has a religious perspective. It's just a demonic one.
You know, and the Nova, what in Catholic circles is referred to as the Novus Ordo conservatives, who are trying constantly to like find a via media between, you know, actual Catholicism and these communists, are the biggest problems. Like, because, yeah, they're anti-Catholic. Sorry, they're anti-Christian. They're bad people.
Yeah,
couldn't agree more.
Portland gay.
Facts.
Portland gay. Demons go away. You know, potential show title.
That's like how we're going to have to cargo cult exorcisms in a post-apocalyptic situation. We just come up with, like, little nursery rhymes. Portland gay, demon go away.
Well, I mean, you know, we could, you know, you talk about, like, you know, peasant Catholicism, not being able to read.
Peasant exorcism.
Yeah, peasant exorcisms. Like, you know, this might be something we all have to teach to our kids here in, like, 20 years when, you know, we've got Tyrones running all the power grids. And
What do you think my homeschooling curriculum is going to be?
I mean, unironically here, you can demand a demon leave somebody. It's not just something only a priest can do.
There are, in fact, minor exorcisms that mm-hmm. was an order in the church in the first centuries when everyone was infected with demons from, you know, all the pagan demon worship that everyone was doing. So the more serious and completely 100% non-ironic, 100% serious, if you find yourself in a real no-bullshit demon situation, get a priest and don't mess with it.
Looking forward to it. Go ahead, sorry.
Get a priest and don't mess with it at all. At all.
Looking forward to getting concerned calls from other parents because my child keeps screaming, "The power of Christ compels you."
Yeah.
Or, go ahead.
I was going to say, on Dark Enlightenment's point, like, you know, the quote-unquote self-described witchy art ho that you're friends with? That's who you need to be praying for, unironically.
Gentlemen, don't chase after the art ho, chase after the art housewife.
Yeah. And chase the demons out of her.
Nikkei, I'm imagining you just having like a flask of holy water in your breast pocket, right?
And I should have had it at that last date I told you all about.
Yeah, that was a real clunker, man.
Yeah, we don't need to go into that.
All right, are we ready to move on to the next thing?
I think so. All right, but yeah.
Do we want to front load the Halloween content, or do we want to spread around?
Yeah, you know what? Let's front load it with Spoop. Let's go to your spoopy topic, boys.
Okay. This is from the Jewish Daily Forward. Now, this is an old article, but I figured I'd get something that was, you know, fitting. It's the reason for the season. The Tribe That Bites by Allison Gaudet-Yarrow. This is from 10 years ago. But there's some interesting information here, because everyone's been talking about vampires lately. And they've been talking about, well, are vampires an ethno-religious tribe? Well, let's dig into that a little bit and find out a bit more. I never cared much for vampires. Count Chocula cereal never swam in my bowl, and Rice novels eluded me, and I can't look at blood without needing to lie down. The latest mania for the night creatures initially deterred me even more, but it's undeniable that vampires are turning up in curious places. A Bayou diner, True Blood, working class Stockholm, Let the Right One In, and ex-urban high schools, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, paved the way for the Twilight series. Even more curious than vampires' locales, though, is how their mythology gets tangled up with the Jews. When you start telling stories of persecuted groups in the fringes of society, Jews and vampires are both in the room. Now,
Indeed, now, that is curious.
Now, with vampire domestication so rampant, I wouldn't be surprised if a vampire turned up to Davin next to me. And as long as it is David Boreanaz of Angel fame, he's often shirtless and would sacrifice eternal life for a Jewish girl, or at least a character played by a Jewish girl, I wouldn't mind either. So I'm a little late to the party, but here I am. Rice may have made a straight trade from vampires to Jews in her latest book, but it's not just contemporary literature that pits those strangers from the East as either one or the other. Some claim that the original myth of the vampire comes from Genesis. A famous hairy and spurned brother struggles with whether to kiss his twin's neck or to bite it. The Parsha reads, "And Esau ran toward him and embraced him, and he fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept." Sounds like a surprisingly joyous reunion. Jacob had cheated his brother on his birthright, you will recall, but rabbis point to the dots above the Hebrew word neshika, kiss, which indicate another meaning.
Which guy's on television, obviously, he's a fucking kike.
By the way, I think in some Jewish folklore as well, the mythology of the vampires is also tied up with the children of Lilith. Which is obviously not present in the standard Old Testament, but this is that is a figure that crops up within Jewish folklore and mythology.
Yeah, you can see how this becomes like an archetype over time, is like, you know, these people gain a reputation for all the babies they drain the blood from and drink, you know, they yep. kidnap in the middle of the night. So you can understand like how this develops textually.
Yep. Louis Ginsberg writes in the book Legends of the Jews, in the vehemence of his rage against Jacob, Esau vowed that he would bite him dead with his mouth and suck his blood. This midrash plays with the closeness of the words Neshika and Neshika, kiss and bite, respectively, about as close as the spellings of Hanukkah and Hanukkah, but with distinctly darker overtones of fratricide and vampirism. Quickly, Jews were transformed from victims of night prowlers to the blood-sucking outsiders themselves. One of the hoariest old axes of anti-Semitism, the blood libel, is that Jews drink blood or mix it into their matzah. Eric Butler, a professor of German studies at Emory University, who studies vampire psychology, said... Vampire psychology, interesting field there.
Oh, good God, how do you get credentialed in that?
I'm just imagining this vampire that looks like Sigmund Freud asking somebody to tell them about their mother.
Yeah, well, it starts with circumcision at the age of 8 days.
Count Projectula. Eric Butler, a professor of German studies at Emory University who studies vampire psychology, says that historically vampires were symbolic of any persecuted group, and legends about them grew around whatever images the culture had to present. Hence, subjugated Jews became as good an outsider for vampires to represent as any. Butler likens Bram Stoker's characterization of Dracula, the first sympathetic vamp, to Du Maurier's Svengali, a wanderer, a sexual predator, a Jew. Dracula embodied what was then the uncharted East. He was wealthy, debonair, and any ripe-aged woman was a possible conquest. Okay. In his forthcoming Metamorphoses of the Vampire in Literature and Film, Butler traces the vampire's evolution in popular culture, finding that the terror that the vampire wields lies in the fact that it moves and changes as fast as modern life. Oh, it shapeshifts! Is that what you're saying? You see, the vampire is a shapeshifter? Is that what it is?
Wow.
He claims that a culturally inclusive society with a dovish approach to monsters fosters tolerance and shapes xenophobia.
I couldn't quite catch that one.
He claims that a culturally inclusive society with a dovish approach to monsters fosters tolerance and shames xenophobia.
Wow. Monster Girl Handbook BTFO.
So wait a minute. So you're saying that tolerance of monsters leads to tolerance of sexual deviance and parasitism.
Yeah, miss me with the xenophilia.
Let's sit cross-legged and sing Kumbaya with the Count. By the 20th century...
Okay.
That's in there. Let's sit cross-legged and sing Kumbaya with the Count. By the 20th century, Jewish stories employed character tropes, but the haunting of dank castles became passé. Vampires are far too symbolically rich to stay cooped up in Transylvania. In Matthew L. Wartell's Blood of Our Children, the vampire Nosferatu infiltrates an 18th century Polish ghetto and begins ravaging boys on the eve of their 13th birthdays. Okay. There's a lot of subtext. There's a lot to unpack with that.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, the metaphor falls apart here, because they said on their 13th birthdays, that's a little bit old, you know, given some of their pedo tendencies.
Well, because it's their bar mitzvah, that's why. Hardly the most sought-after bar mitzvah gift, but a remarkable reversal of both the blood libel and the nubile virgins of Count Dracula's day. Now, of course, vampires are often the good guys as the bad. Sarah Jane Stratford charges vampires with stopping the Holocaust in her debut novel, The Midnight Guardian.
What?
Oh, God.
Vampires stop the Holocaust.
We may have to do a dramatic reading of some of that.
Wow, a fictional creature stopped a fictional event. That's incredible. Her vampires are both morally responsible and self-interested. They use their considerable powers to thwart genocide while combating hunger, as Hitler's death camps are killing off all their food.
So that's how they just started feeding people, because of the supply lines.
Usually you have stuff like blood, like the Blood Rain video game series, which posit that the Nazis were aligned with the vampires. Usually it goes the other way. These millennials transform the traditional vampire into a monogamous do-gooder. One called Eamon is even a cross-averse Jew himself, having led a pious life before being bitten. Now he's too busy hunting Nazis to light Sabbath candles, but he can enter churches, unlike the formerly Christian night creatures. If that... So even in the story, the Jewish vampire is subverting everything.
Yeah. It's like, let the vampires into your house. It's more tolerant that way. They won't hurt you, we promise.
The vampires in your church, they'll help your church GDP. Let them in, you know,
There's synchronicity here. Thank you, Mr. Heidegger. You've been vindicated yet again.
If vampires are equipped to cripple the Holocaust, surely they can manage the suburbs where they have descended upon diners and high schools. Twilight series writer Stephanie Meyer is a Mormon, but Melissa Rosenberg, who is responsible for the Twilight screenplays, is a Jew. She told Los Angeles Jewish Journal that the vampires of Twilight are kosher, if kosher is a synonym for cool. With the current ubiquity of vampires, perhaps they've outlived their metaphorical life. No longer the other, they now just highlight a chosenness to star in their own fiction. In the 2009 film Daybreakers, everyone's a vampire. The outsiders are human. But can these emblematic outsiders depicting minorities still wear that badge now that they have entered into the mainstream? Maybe not. Maybe we'll turn to mummies instead. Much to think about.
Then you deserve to be fucking bullwhipped by a Cossack. What the fuck are you doing?
Bullwhipped and, you know, had an exorcism performed on you by a Cossack.
Right.
Based.
Indeed.
It's just, I mean, that's the whole thing with the vampires. The funny thing is, like, they've embraced being vampires within fiction. They have. Like, you can see, like, the subtext is there across the board.
Well, they just love being evil. They like it.
Yes, they do.
They hate Christ, and they love that fact.
Okay, sorry, I have to read this Tablet Mag article now, because I didn't realize when I pulled both the forward and the Tablet Mag, they were about the same book. Tablet Mag wrote about Midnight Guardian. And I think we got to get the Tablet Mag perspective on this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, fire away.
Once again, the only people who read Tablet are insane, neurotic Jews and Nazis.
And, by the way, Frank, I thought you were going to play some spooky music for me. You got that? I think we got to set this on. Yeah, there we go. Now that we're talking about vampire Holocaust, thank you. Although they must avoid sunlight, vampires have never been hotter. 1 out of 7 books sold in the United States in the first quarter of the year were in Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series. By the way, this article is from 2009, October 30th, 2009. The movie based on Meyer's first book grossed nearly $200 million domestically. HBO's True Blood, which plops down vampires in a southern gothic setting, then throws in a good deal of nudity, was the summer's most talked about series. As could be expected, this boom in blood-sucking entertainment has spawned an army of sequels and imitators. Among them is Sarah Jane Stratford's debut novel, The Midnight Guardian, published this month. Set from 1938 to 1940, it follows a group of English millennials, vampires who have been undead for more than 1,000 years as they try to sabotage Hitler's plans for world domination. Stratford's elegant plot device establishes that war, by killing too many humans, leads to vampire famine. This was defense of what both humans and vampires held dear, Stratford writes of the millennials' quest, although the humans did not count among their own delights their status as delicious and necessary food. But as Hitler's intent to cleanse Europe of vampires, as well as certain other undesirables, particularly Jews, becomes apparent, the mission's urgency grows. Yes, that's right. Stratford has given this latest vampire revival its first Holocaust novel. This, of course, is not without its problems. Vampires, a secret cult of an ancient tradition bent on world domination and feeding on human blood, fit a bit too snugly with the demented stereotypes that more imaginative anti-Semites have cultivated for centuries. Emory University professor Eric Butler traces this connection in his forthcoming book, Metamorphoses of the Vampire. Originating in 12th century England, the blood libel, the idea that Jews ritualistically slaughter Gentiles and feast on their blood, was so common by the late 19th century that Blutsauger, or bloodsucker, the German word for vampires, was a common derogation for Jews. Karl Luger, the notoriously anti-Semitic mayor of Vienna, amplified this charge, in turn inspiring his admirer Hitler to call Jews parasites in Mein Kampf. Though Stratford's vampires are targeted for genocide by the Nazis, they're not allegorical substitutes for the doomed Jews of Europe. In the Midnight Guardian, there are vampires and there are Jews. There is even one vampire who used to be a Jew, though no longer considers himself so. After all, blood is not kosher.
Mm.
Instead, Stratford uses vampires as a double for Jews, real and stark examples of things the Jews were falsely accused of being. Lining them up together, she cleverly articulates the pseudo-biological basis of Nazi anti-Semitism and attempts to communicate what it means to wish to wipe away an entire people because of perceived biological differences.
I need to point out the premise here that, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a vampire. That's what they want. You need to, like, believe that for this to hold up.
Hey, I might be.
There's nothing wrong with being a parasite that sucks the blood out of children and constantly terrorizes people and keeps them in bondage.
There's no justification for any prejudice against that.
Hey, I might be a blood-sucking monster, but at least I'm not a Nazi.
Thank you, Hitler, for taking out the vampires, too.
You know, I'm going to call it.
Clearly it was effective. Do you see any vampires walking around? I think you should thank him for that.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it now. Sorry to interrupt. But yeah, I'm going to call it now. You know, in the next couple of years, I bet we're going to see, you know, in the spirit of Twilight, maybe like Antifa vampire teen romance novels.
Oh, what if we get like a vampire's survivor museum? You know, it's going to talk about how many vampires were able to escape the camps.
and the number of vampire survivors just keeps going up as the years go on.
Actually, I have an even better idea in this vein. I'm going to submit a idea to my local Holocaust Museum on what they can do for October, like for special programming, and they can make it vampire themed.
That would be the greatest troll in the history of trolling.
They gassed us with garlic. Ooh.
The shower heads were just garlic presses the whole time.
I was gassed with five cloves.
Zyklon G.
press G for garlic.
let's get some G's in the chat here. Of course, such points about history and ideology and the use of such literary devices to make them are not the book's prime focus. In the Twilight tradition, the book's obsession is heartrending, ecstatic, all-consuming, impossible, way too graphic, and in one scene, pretty raunchy vampire love. Unlike Meyer's goyish Edward Cullen, Stratford's protagonist is Eamon, the ex-Jew. His soulmate Bridget is the vampire who made him by biting his neck. To complicate this intervape vampire love even further, one of the book's subplots has to do with Leon Ehrenfeld, a legendary Jewish vampire hunter who, rather than kill Bridget, has asked her to save his children by smuggling them to safety in England. Thus, the destinies of the vampires and the Jews, those similarly persecuted traditional and benevolent creatures in Stratford's world, vampires are good, even if they literally live off murder, are sensitively intertwined. Very interesting. Yes, obviously, we the Jews and the vampires, like they just go together like chocolate and peanut butter. Unfortunately, yeah. Stratford's vampire-Jew connection is too crudely done. Because her book is only a semi-fantasy, a recognizable, historically true world that also happens to have vampires, one can never quite know where other, different humans stand. The line between her imagination and reality is smudged. She should have made her book either more realistic or more fantastical. What she's saying is that it's basically Jews and vampires and Nazis, and those are the only group of people in this world.
I think, they can't bring themselves to call it a true fantasy. Any book that's written about the Holocaust can't be like, it's only a semi-fantasy.
Art Spiegelman's graphic novel masterpiece, Mouse, which also uses non-human creatures to depict the Holocaust, represents the realistic route. After all, for all the artistic liberty Spiegelman takes, Mouse is entirely faithful to what happened. The Jews are not... The Jews are not anthropomorphic mice, as is frequently said. Rather, they are Jewish men and women who are merely drawn as mice. They have tails, but they do not have a yen for cheese. Thus, there is never confusion over what Spiegelman is trying to say about Nazism and the Holocaust, as there is in The Midnight Guardian. As for Stratford, she ought to have taken the fantastical route, a more committed allegory, a World War II novel in which the vampires of Europe and the vampires of Europe alone were targeted for extermination, might have worked better. It certainly would have been more horrifying, and a good vampire yarn would have always be a horror story. Yes, very horrifying to exterminate all the vampires out of Europe. Definitely not the story that ends up, and then everybody lived happily ever after.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I want the blood sucking parasites that use long time are immortal and use constant oppression to destroy the people. Oh, God.
I want this, but it's written by Hans Christian Andersen.
Yeah. Well, I hope everybody had a happy Halloween.
Because I just want to oven the Jews. I want to make soap from kites.
Yeah, that one will never get old. But man, I think from those two articles, we might be witnessing the genesis of the VDL, the Vampire Defamation League.
that's the show title.
We're gonna get articles from the VDL about how we need to let werewolves into our Section 8 apartments and everything, and otherwise decent suburbs.
Oh gosh, yeah. Zombies. Why do you got to keep the zombies out? Why do you have to have the fence around the graveyard to keep them in place? This is segregation of the zombies. We have to do something about this.
President Trump's graveyard fence is so offensive.
They're putting zombie children in cages.
In coffins.
Did you know they only eat the brains of children because they need more programs, more midnight basketball? That's what I heard.
Exactly.
All right. Well, anyway.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't know how to work. I'll just shoehorn this in because I have no way to build up. It just makes me think of the problem of Gorgon milkers.
God. Oh, man.
Look, never let them fucking blame us for demonizing them with caricatures and evil depictions. They do that to themselves.
Yeah,
with great gusto.
I identify as a monster queer. Some days I feel like a human, some days I feel like a monster.
Oh, all right. But yeah, I was going to say, does anybody else have any? I think that was it. But does anybody else have any spoopy content?
I have something about haunted.
Let's do it.
Oh, dude, fire away.
Let's talk about haunted and empty malls. From Politico. From Politico, the next economic crisis: empty retail space as tenants stop paying and shrink their offices. Commercial real estate is cratering. So, Katie O'Donnell, 10/18/2020, commercial real estate is in trouble and turbulence in the $15 trillion market is threatening to bleed over into the broader financial system just as the U.S. struggles to emerge from a recession. The longer the pandemic paralyzes hotels, retailers, and office buildings, the more difficult it is for property owners to meet their mortgage payments, raising the specter of widespread downgrades, defaults, and eventual foreclosures. As companies like JCPenney, Neiman Marcus, and Pier 1 file for bankruptcy, retail properties are losing major tenants with no clear plan to replace them, while hotels are running below 50% occupancy. 7 months into the crisis, the industry's pleas for relief to Congress and the Federal Reserve have been in vain. Lawmakers are at odds over even the most basic details of an economic relief package for individuals, let alone businesses. And the Fed, leery of taking on more risk, is hoping that the trillion-dollar market for securities backed by commercial mortgages will heal itself. There's also the fear that direct significant relief to the industry would be seen as, quote, a handout to the president's friends, since Donald Trump made his fortune in commercial real estate, said one lobbyist frustrated with the lack of traction the issue is getting with policymakers. Sometimes people forget the depth and breadth of what commercial real estate is, said Mike Flood, senior vice president of commercial and multifamily policy at the Mortgage Bankers Association. What's at risk here is both the ability for people to stay in their apartments and the ability for people to go to their jobs. So unless there's a stimulus, there's a lot less to go back to once we're back to normal times. A major problem: no one knows how long the drop in commercial real estate will last. Business travel isn't expected to pick up for at least a year, so hotels are being hammered. And while the office buildings have not yet felt the brunt of the downturn, offices tend to have long leases. That will change as many companies rethink the way they'll operate as work from home becomes the norm. The number of commercial loans that have been packaged into securities going into, quote, special servicing where distressed loans are transferred to a new manager hired by bondholders to negotiate a payment plan on their behalf, has steadily increased since March. And it has become clear that the virus will continue to cut into revenue for some time, so even those property owners who have been able to patch together payments, thanks in part now to now elapsed relief measures passed by Congress, may start to slip. The loss of paying tenants could touch off a wave of property write-downs and eventual foreclosures on everything from shopping centers to apartment buildings, but it's not just a pocket of wealthy investors who will get hurt by widespread write-downs. 87% of public pension funds and 73% of private pension funds hold real estate investments. And the article goes on to talk about this some more. But basically, you know, like every mall is going to be, you know, as Chris Rock puts it, the mall white people used to go to. And
yeah, and all malls are destined to be haunted by spooks.
Yeah, exactly. like this is what happens when you base your entire society on this unsustainable model and financialization of everything. Oh God. And it's going to have real impacts on real people. You know, the United States has 6 times the retail space that the average European city does, or that Europe does.
Wow.
Do we buy 6 times more stuff than they do, or do they just, like, not have...
I don't know. That's an interesting question, too.
That I couldn't say. But, yeah, to the tone of...
Yeah, they do have smaller houses to put, like, less stuff in, so it actually could be possible we do.
And what really gets me too about the tone of the article is we had to go like 8 paragraphs in. The first part of it is kvetching about like, you know, oh my God, you know, our primary concern with the virus is that these mortgage payments aren't going to get made. You know, the commercial real estate sector, oy vey, it's going to collapse. And it took them like 8 or 10 paragraphs to get in before finally they were like, oh, yeah, by the way, this might affect you, average person, a little bit. It might affect your pension fund or your retirement fund. You know, just FYI. Really shows their priorities, I think.
Oh, damn it. I just noticed my Mike Tyson articles from 5 years ago.
Oh, you didn't see that already?
No, I didn't.
Oh, screw it. Let's do it.
It's still good content. I mean, that would reemerge. But anyway, on the topic of malls, so my plan is, when we have a really fully good and dead mall around where I am, I'm going to let it rot a little bit and then get some totally cut-rate property there and put my racist bookstore, which is just going to be a place for my guys to hang out.
Man, I've heard of where, you know, how much retail space though do you need to just for copies of Siege?
You'd be surprised.
Yeah, we only have 2 books. We have Siege and the Comfy Chair. That's it. Like the 2 book bookstore.
Actually, most of the space is just going to be storing beer.
grab a beer, grab Siege, and get a complimentary exorcism at the door.
Yes. Absolutely. You guys, everybody can do this like in their area because that property is going to be so fucking cheap, especially if you like go for a unit that's like deep buried back, like way past anywhere where people are even walking anymore. And if it's just you guys and like that's all who even knows about it, then it's not even going to have that much of a threat to it. Our future is going to be meeting up in dead malls.
Nick, I just saw your... I just noticed what your abbey is. That is a great old third rail meme right there. If people, on the replay, in case Abby says, I'm a Ridgeway Democrat and I do not vote.
Yeah. I made this into a little sticker a long, long time ago. If I see you in person for whatever reason, you ask me for a sticker. I might just have one of these on hand.
I'm definitely getting one of those.
Yeah, sign me up, fam. That can be the sponsor for the next episode. But yeah, I'm imagining too just the absolute irony about how, you know, in some ways the modern iteration of this thing, right, got started off by gamers wanting truth in gaming journalism, and it could end with you know, basically like renting out a, you know, purchasing a former gaming store, you know, as your local racist meetup.
So I have a new winner. I think that you guys are gonna like.
Okay.
You guys have anything else on malls? I don't really have, like, obviously everyone knows my collapse takes and all that, so I don't really have anything new to add to that. So my new winner is Adolf Hitler.
Collapse. Humiliation. Carl Schmidt. Christopher Lash. The Technological Society.
Oh. Narcissist.
Nihil. Techno-capital.
Lumpen proles.
The Society of
Lumpen proles.
Bless you, Frank. You're an angel.
Every time it does the g-g-g or it kills me. All right, so my new winner is Adolf Hitler. Kentucky State Police training presentation quoting Hitler is unacceptable, governor says. So if you have the, Frank's got pulled up. So there's this, a slide from a Kentucky State Police training presentation quoting Adolf Hitler, and here's the, here's what the bullet points say. Violence of action. Ruthlessness without anger. Controlled aggression without anger. Able to beat violence with greater violence. A mindset void of emotion where perception, analysis, and response merge into one process. Perceptions and actions are not hindered by the potential of death. Be the loving father, spouse, and friend, as well as the ruthless killer. And then there's a quote from Albert Einstein. The world is a dangerous place, and not because of those who do evil, but because of those who look on and do nothing. And then the very first ascent in the last part is the very first essential for success is a perpetually constant and regular employment of violence.
You know, my favorite part of it.
Hitler on the same slide.
Oh, and then like at the very bottom of that quote, in like in eligible, like almost like a Comic Sans fault, it says Adolf Hitler.
Yeah, my favorite part about that, right, is that it's almost the same color as the background. So you really have to, if you're just listening to this, you really have to squint to see who they attribute the quote to. It's in a different font and a way different color that almost matches the background compared to the rest of the text.
It has to be our guy who did this.
Be the loving father. I can't get over be the loving father, spouse, and friend, as well as the ruthless killer.
Like, bro, what? I thought you guys were just training police.
Louisville. Okay, so Governor Andy Beshear reacted to a report Friday showing a Kentucky State Police training slideshow quoting Adolf Hitler three times and advocating officers to use ruthless violence, calling it unacceptable. Students in the journalism program at Louisville's DuPont Manual High School obtained the slideshow from the agency through an open records request and first reported it. This is
May I just chime in and say that, like, this was discovered, but journalists are useless. Literally, some fucking, like, shit posters over at some local high school discovered this. And, journalists are obsolete, even more than we previously thought.
This is absolutely unacceptable, said Beshear in an emailed statement. It is further unacceptable that I just learned about this through social media. We will collect all the facts and take immediate corrective action. As reported by the Manual Red Eye, one slide in the training material for KSP cadets titled Violence of Action tells officers to meet violence with greater violence and be a ruthless killer. The slide then quotes a line from Hitler's Mein Kampf. The very first essential for success is a perpetually constant and regular employment of violence. One of three from the genocidal German dictator in the presentation. The closing slide of the training states Uber alles in large text, a phrase that is associated with nationalism and Nazis in Germany. The Red Eye reported a KSB captain said in a deposition 2 weeks ago, this warrior mentality training was taught to cadets by former Lieutenant Kurt Hall, the assistant commander at its academy from 2005 2015, who was later commander of internal affairs at KSP before his recent retirement. KSP spokesman Joshua Lawson told the Red Eye he did not know how long the slideshow was used to train cadets or if it is still used. The quotes are used for their content and relevance to the topic addressed in the presentation, Lawson said. The presentation touches on several aspects of service, selflessness, and moral guidance. All of these topics go to the fundamentals of law enforcement, such as treating everyone equally, service to the public, and being guided by the law. Lawson did not immediately respond to a request for a comment Friday afternoon from the Courier-Journal, though a spokeswoman for the Kentucky Justice and Public Safety Cabinet later condemned the training material and said it hasn't been used for many years. It is unacceptable that this material was ever included in the training of law enforcement, stated Cabinet spokeswoman Morgan Hall in an email. Our administration does not condone the use of this material. The material is not currently a part of any training materials and was removed in 2013. The ADL, whose mission is to stop the defamation of Jewish people and secure justice and fair treatment to all, tweeted that using Hitler's words in the slideshow was inexcusable. ADL is actively working in the state to determine what happened and ensure it doesn't happen again, the tweet read. Here we go. Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron, that's the black guy, by the way, the black Republican, also issued a statement to the Courier-Journal denouncing the KSP training. Why anyone would feel it's appropriate to quote Adolf Hitler is beyond me, Cameron said. I don't think this is representative of the men and women who serve in the thin gray line.
Wait, what? I thought it was the thin blue line.
Maybe the gray and maybe is Kentucky that hardcore of Confederate sympathizers? Is that like what's going on here?
maybe this based black Republican, maybe he's trying to sneak in a pro-Confederate bit, you know, while he's having to he's just having to appease the masses.
He's secretly doing speeches to the League Kentucky. Of the South. Talk about George Fitzhugh.
Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Right. No, the Kentucky State Police uniform is gray.
Okay.
Don't forget that Louisville is where the Breonna Taylor thing happened.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, you have to use ruthless force against these people. Because they threw a riot over a woman who was involved in a drug deal getting shot. Like she deserved.
Yep.
U.S. Representative John Yarmuth tweeted he was angry and embarrassed as a Kentuckian. And as a Jewish American, I am genuinely disturbed that there are people like this who not only walk among us, but who have been entrusted to keep us safe, Yarmuth wrote. There needs to be consequences.
What's his name? John Yarmuluk?
John Yarmuluk.
I mean, what do you say to that guy other than, like, I don't know, shut up, vampire, get out of Kentucky.
Ew, he's Jewish?
Or that.
Man, Frank's been quick on the trigger today.
Yeah.
That's that day drinking that's going on.
What? When the fuck did TV become real?
Day drinking gives you superpowers.
I was going to say, if you keep your BAC up too high, then the vampires won't want to suck your blood. I think it's a smart strategy.
Interesting take.
Stay day drunk. Keep the Jewish vampires away.
Why was he dressed as Hitler? Why was he dressed as Hitler?
Why was I dressed as Hitler?
If you're just constantly running around with like a .10, you know, and just a little bit, you know, there you go.
Yeah, Mad Men was not fiction. It was instructive. Just, you know, three martini lunch.
A day drink a day keeps the vampires away.
Wild card, bitches! Yeah!
Nice.
We gotta take that soundboard away from him.
Anyway,
put the soundboard down, Frank. You're drunk.
I think Johnny Real 242's got it. Booze and Cruise against Zog.
Yes. Give an 8-H to that, Morther.
Just load up on some 40s, get your favorite malt liquor, hop in the hate bus, and you know you're off to the races.
Minesweeper's on fire again. Volkspolizei lives matter. It's in reference to the thin gray line. It's Wehrmacht gray, and oh no, I shouldn't have been day drinking Manischewitz. Now the vampires are going to get me.
Jampires, I like it. Jampires and their Jam Boy Janissaries.
Ooh.
Also, if y'all are not familiar with Jam Boys, look it up. It's delightful.
Keg's new Salon article just came out. Todd Zombie said, "I'm a necrophile, but you're the monster."
that is sadly believable.
Yeah, you know what's funny today, what's fiction today, you know, 5 years from now, I expect to see that article.
What's fiction today will be, you know, shoved down your children's throats tomorrow, and, you know, they'll be made ashamed of what didn't happen.
What's fiction today is HR policy tomorrow.
Yep.
Yeah, I think, like, Kanye is the 2024 GOP candidate, is probably going to be saying something like, Democrats are the real necrophiles, or necrophobes.
Another one from Johnny. Another one from Johnny, this Reich will last 1,000 beers.
Yeah.
So by, like, next Tuesday?
Yeah, yeah!
A Reich being 1,000 beers about the average TRS gathering.
Yeah.
One of the best comments.
120 guys, two or three empty beers in the two or three beers left in the morning.
Yeah.
I had to warn my wife that if we if we ever make it to a TRS gathering, that we need to be careful. I might get cornered by Eric Stryker and made to pound shots with him because I've heard his reputation.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Well, man,
now you guys got me in a big party mood.
See, this is part of Frank's plan. He wanted us all to start day drinking.
I like women with big, giant tits and big asses. Yeah.
All right, once again, Alex Jones vindicated.
Who else has got something to talk about?
Yeah, I was going to say, Dark. I know you had. I know you had some prep. Anything you want to line up, man?
Oh, I was just the ammunition shortage and gun owners and ammo manufacturers. There's not 9mm available anywhere. Walmart is like not selling guns anymore in certain areas because of the riots.
You hear
that? Yeah.
It means not welcome.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just Newsweek, you know, firearm sales have soared in 2020, and there's a huge ammunition shortage that's not due to be alleviated until March of 2021, if ever. So,
wow.
Yeah, so buying gold, apparently buying ammunition legally, of course. That's the new collapsitarian store of value.
Yeah, well, ammunition and shoes are the collapse economy.
The collapse pogs.
Yeah.
Collapse pogs.
No, but like in an actual true collapse situation, ammo, that's not even a joke. Ammo and shoes would be hot commodities that would be bargain trade.
Dead ass. I mean, that's... I feel bad if you don't have your ammo already. Look online. There are some places that don't change their prices, but it's like deeply buried. If you need like ammunition, there's ammoseek.com. It can help you find cheap ammo.
Yeah, but obviously,
your humble correspondent was at his friendly neighborhood gun store recently, and keeping in mind that, you know, I'm an old guy and I started shooting relatively young. Freaking 22 long was like 11 cents a round. I can remember shooting it at like 1.5 cents a round. My wallet, like I was like a rabbi with my last shekel with this stuff. It was painful. Like, oh my God. Oh God. Yeah. But that's why, we have to, you know, like we have to win so that, things can return to normal and, you know, ammo can be cheap again and wholesome American pastime of, you know, shooting enormous amounts of lead down the range doesn't cost you an arm and a leg.
My politics can be summed up from a line of DMX. As long as I got my gun, I'm right.
That's right. We're stealing XAM's bit. DMX is ours now. I will say too, I guess at the macro environment, one of the things that does kind of concern me with the sort of nexus of COVID closures, an ammunition shortage and Walmart not selling. My personal, you know, tinfoil theory here is, one of the side effects that Zog would really love out of this is that COVID closes all your mom and pop stores. All of a sudden, you know, Walmart's the only store in town, and well, now Walmart's not selling ammunition. You know, at least in many rural counties, like rural places, you know, it is the case that you know, Walmart might be the only game in town, the only place to buy your groceries, really to buy anything. So I don't know. That's my little tinfoil theory I've been kicking around since I saw that headline earlier this week.
I believe I'm just saying, like at this point, you know, between the Great Reset posting, you know, all this other stuff, I wouldn't be surprised if they were just trying to shut down. You know, I mean, ammo prices started spiking back in, gosh, what was it, 2011, when Obama's, you know, like DHS ordered like a million rounds of 10 millimeter or something. Like the federal government started ordering ridiculous amounts of ammunition, and I can't remember when, but it was during the Obama administration, and markedly drove up prices. And so, you know, like the Department of Education had a SWAT team that needed, you know, 20,000 rounds of ammunition or something, you know, 200,000 rounds of ammunition for something. I can't remember exactly what the numbers were, but it was a lot. Every department of the federal government had, you know, an armed wing that needed lots and lots of training ammo. Taxes on ammunition, right? Like that old Chris Rock bit of like, got out there, you know, guns should be basically free, but bullets should cost $10,000. Like that's really on their list of things to do.
And yeah, nor should you. And anyway, now that the state has stored up all this ammo, right? Like, can't even be bothered to use it, I guess, against rioters who are destroying everything. I don't know. I guess they're just, you know, they're going to hodl forever. They're treating it like Bitcoin. They're just going to never use it, hold on to it, and, you know, not use it in a legal and state sanctioned way against people burning down cities.
Wait a second. You're telling me there's IRL loot crates?
Yeah, I was going to say looting phase meme, you know, over.
Looting crate phase.
Oh, man, we've really got embarrassment of riches with show titles, I think, so far.
It's feast or famine with those, man. Either everybody's on all cylinders and the show titles flow hot and heavy.
I mean, we've got the spirit of All Hallows Eve within us.
Yeah, the only in the show prep, the only bit I had for a potential show title, but I think, what was it? It was It's All Hallows Eve, not All Hallows Steve. But I don't know. only folks who are normicons in like 2008 will remember that one.
So basically all of us.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to tread all over you there, Dark, you know, regarding Walmart and like selling ammunition, you know, what else did you want to kind of gen from that?
I just, to me right now, the biggest, perhaps the best reason to vote for Trump is that he's not actively trying to take your guns. And, my politics are pretty simple. If you want to take my guns, I fucking hate you. So, there's and obviously, like, the state has abrogated its duty in all kinds of places: Philadelphia, Portland, Louisville, Minneapolis, and you need to be able to defend yourself. And so get out there, and if you don't already have it, like, go to the websites Nikkei mentioned, find some, and make it a priority. And you know, I told you so 5 years ago. Like, all of us gun nuts were like, they're coming for your guns and they're coming for a civil war. I guess we were right.
Yeah, how does that old verse, I guess, apropos more now than ever, right? You know, if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. Or I guess if we want to make it so the audience will understand it, you know, to put it in a more modern parlance, you know, if a weeb has not a katana, sell his body pillow to buy one.
That's so gay.
Polo!
You faggot!
So you're a queer, aren't you?
Might have. Frank's being brutal today.
Frank. Not amused. Don't give it to you. Wait for you to get it. Look, Frank is a mean drunk.
I've heard the stories.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, we met IRL and he attacked me in person. He put me on an electrified floor. He locked me in a closet.
Dude, that headlock, I thought he was going to fucking choke you out, man.
He claims
that photos of me. That's
Frank.
He claims to have photos of me that I know he does not have.
Or does he?
Hey, first of all, Borzoi, you know, the photos he gets off of an OnlyFans page, you know, those are his property. He can download them and distribute them as he sees fit.
I was getting concerned text messages one particular weekend. It's like, you know that Frank's saying these things about you. He's like, what? No, I put the message. He's like, so Frank likes to drink, huh? I was like, yeah, he does.
Well, to be fair, I'm very guilty of that as well. So, you know, this nigga over here is not gonna throw stones in glass houses.
To see about you and your crew and what you guys are gonna do. Woo woo! Don't forget the other glass sex, like the one you heard, Jurassic.
Actual audio of the last appearance Frank made at a TRS event.
the ooh woo has to be my favorite part.
All right, what are we? Because I had to step away for a second. What are we? What are we talking about right now?
Apparently, RIP Sean Connery. That's something I just found out.
Oh goodness. He's had to have been pushing like 95 or something, right?
He retired from acting after The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
I'd forgotten that was his last. That was his last piece. Apparently his. I can't even remember who to attribute this to because we're just shooting from the hip here. But apparently he was of the opinion that an actor should always be working, you know, just to hone the craft. And so he does have. He does have some very, dramatic and weighty performances in just absolutely shit-tier films.
I'm not going to attempt to even do the accent because I'm very bad at impressions, but Sean Connery walking up and saying, I'm here to act in roles and beat women, and I'm all out of roles.
I'm here to act in roles and beat women, and I'm all out of roles.
There we go.
Frank, can we clip that for future use, please?
No, he was great, man. He was great.
Johnny again. He's slapping broads in heaven.
Yeah,
the look on Barbara Walters' face when he was just like, just a light slap, you know. All time priceless moments there.
Do you think
if you guys are looking for a Connery movie to watch, you can watch Zardoz.
I was going to say, Zardoz is freaking great, man.
I've never seen it. I might watch that today.
It is a strange, strange movie. What are we
where
say
can
about?
I find it?
Not on Netflix, I can tell you that.
Well, I wasn't going to look.
I was going to say, I'm imagining right now that he's up in the afterlife, you know, three fingers of whiskey in one hand, and then, just patrolling the shit out of RBG's ghost.
Well, why would RBG's ghost be in heaven?
You can't come up here.
Yeah, just enforcing sundown laws in heaven. Like, nope, you've got to get back on your side of town.
Nigga.
I was going to say, before we shitpost too hard, or just go and do a de facto pause button with Zardoz.
I've already done that episode. I'm not doing it again.
Oh, I didn't even realize that. I'm behind on my content.
The broke pause button meme is asking me to do your favorite movie. The woke pause button meme is asking me to do an episode I've already done. That has literally happened to me three full times now.
I still remember with fondness. I think it was like 2 years ago. You did the My Little Pony review.
Yeah,
I could.
That one unfortunately is what kicked off me. Like, because I did. I told the guy, here's how that. The guy kept pestering me. He's like, fine, I'll do it. Just pay me $100, and he did. And on the spot, through Bitcoin. I was like, well, shit.
Yeah.
And that's what started the whole donation process.
I knew that was a donation episode. I didn't know it was like immediate. Like, yeah, no, okay.
No, the guy ponied up immediately.
Oh, ponied up.
Pun unintended.
Nice.
Yeah, and it just reinforces, I guess, the meme that we're all sellouts. But yeah, just to do a graceless pivot before we shitpost too hard. You know, I think we've exhausted most everybody's stuff. The only thing that I had on deck, you know, was my winner for the week, which was, you know, MAGA rappers. So Frank, if you want to pull up that link that I put in the show chat, I once again went to the well with The Root and the subset of their blog called Very Smart Brothers, which is by turn either horrifying that these people think their opinion matters or hilarious because, you know, they don't write so good and they're the quintessential midwits. And I'm just taking a moment to admire the
Are they midwits or are they nigwits?
Yes and yes. And I'm also just taking a moment for folks that are listening. The article picture for this features Lil Wayne wearing a sweater and a turtleneck, you know, his grill gleaming in the photograph light, you know, standing next to Trump. And Trump is just mogging the shit out of him, man. He's got to have a foot on this dude.
Yeah, no, he's really Lil Wayne.
that was always the funniest part with the way that they portray blacks in media, and obviously we know why they do that, because we know who's in charge of the media, but if you've ever lived in the hood or been hood adjacent and you've seen how like the average black is and what they look like, they are a shockingly short people. They are
the manlets are dangerous, man. They got something to prove.
Yeah, they are a race of manlets.
Yeah, I don't have it at my fingertips, but yeah, the data I've seen is that they are, you know, the American black population for height is just like all over the board. That they're not, it's not as neat of a centralized bell curve as others. That you got a crap load. I think the term is bifurcated bell curve. You have a crap load of them, you know, that are NBA, you know, 6'6" and up, and then you got a crap load of them who are just total, you know, irredeemable manlets. Sorry to the manlets on the call.
What is it with black people and, like, having a disproportionate amount of, like, missing limbs or body parts? You ever notice that?
Wait, what?
More choices, like, actually.
You ever, like, in the... Oh, yes. I actually totally believe that one 100%. But, like, you ever go, like, in a real fucking hood-ass part of town, and you just see niggas with limbs missing?
It's being shot and poor diet. It's literally a combination of bullets and diabetes.
Diabetes, bullets, and traffic accidents, motorcycles, yeah. That sort of thing.
Oh, traffic accidents is a big one. Yeah,
that explains it. Well, thank you. Now I know.
And, yeah, I was gonna say
the thing you were referring to, Bellerophon, is a bimodal distribution where it's U shaped, instead of the bell curve.
Gracias.
Yeah,
yeah. Hustle's got a good anecdote as well. This is very typical, actually. Black dude I worked with missing leg was bit by a spider and didn't do nothing.
What? He lost the leg from a spider bite. Holy
Hyper reality.
Well, that's actually a very common problem they have, is like where stuff, like, if they're not just outright shot because that requires immediate attention, they are a people that will tend to just put stuff off until it becomes so gangrenous that that body parts have to start getting chopped off because they will not go to the hospital.
I wish I had a word to explain that phenomenon.
I got a word.
It's a shockingly common phenomenon. Not the spider bite necessarily, but the way that they go about medical problems.
Ignoring them until they are life-threatening, yeah, basically.
Yeah, ignoring them until they have to go to intensive care and, you know, stretch the resources of our system and call, you know, and put the medical system on the brink of collapse, which they're also not going to pay for.
Right. So like, what could have been taken care of for like a $3 tube of antibacterial cream and like a Band-Aid, you know, 3 weeks ago, now requires like $100,000 intervention hospital stay and like heroic efforts by this brilliant surgeon to like save this guy's life and save what's left of his limb. And he's not going to get paid for any of it.
And then, yeah, just so the subject, or I guess the patient can continue to not be productive. It's a brilliant investment strategy, not going to lie.
You deny my SSI claim. I'm going to show you. I'm going to lose my leg to a spider bite. I am extra disabled, motherfucker.
Oh, dude, that's it. That's the new bit. Lose a limb to own the libs.
No, to own Whitey.
Losing limbs to own Whitey.
That'll show me. So one,
SSI claim now.
I mean, Kegs is quoting a couple famous lines from the song "Whitey on the Moon." A rat done bit my sister Nell, and Whitey's on the moon. Her feet and leg began to swell, and Whitey's on the moon.
Rats, spiders, are they all agents of white supremacy, and we didn't even realize it?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know if rats are an agent of white supremacy, considering the Black Plague.
Well,
oh, that's
there can
fair.
Only be one Black Plague around here, and the rats are getting jealous.
Also,
okay, I see what they're doing now.
Also, C. Chestnut chimed in the chat with, "This is basically the opposite of Peter Parker." Oh man. But before we get to too much Dindu posting, you know, just to get back to our our natural conservative allies, you know, the rapping community. So I went back to the well on the root, like I was saying earlier. And so what I'd like to point out is just how unself-aware and cheesy these people are without realizing it. The link for the root, if you just Google it, it says the root, colon, the blacker the content, the sweeter the truth. but anyway, what this article is driving at, and you know, it's full of like pomp and shitty attempts at clever wordplay and what have you. But there's been a few folks like 50 Cent, Ice Cube, Lil Pump, and apparently most recently.
Just quickly, apparently the spider bite thing is an epidemic, because CryptoFash is also like, I knew a black guy who lost both his legs to spider bites, or so he says.
Oh, what the hell?
Who knew there were roving bands of white supremacist spiders going about the inner city biting black people's legs and making them lose it?
I've gotten like plenty of spider bites in my life, and I still have like all of my body to me.
We will wreck things after the collapse. Sorry.
Fitty flipped because Chelsea Handler told him to. So,
what is it with Jews and like having names that like perfectly describe them? Like, oh, that's your Mossad handler. You know, oh, that guy's name's Schiller.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's part of the demon pact, right? You have to put a little bit of a warning in your crypto surname.
Yeah, right.
and pedo enabler was too cumbersome for the English language as a last name.
Oh man. Well, anyway, long story short, maybe I'll dress up as a spider for Halloween tonight. I got my costume. But yeah, so 50 Cent, perhaps with his tribal GF or whatever their relationship is, making him flip. Ice Cube, who's been weirdly woke lately, just from some tweets I've seen here and there. Lil Pump, who is just an absolute mystery meat, like unintelligible, like evolutionary failure that gets millions of dollars. And now Lil Wayne.
Speaking of Ice Cube, by the way, there's an article from yesterday. Ice Cube skipped Zoom call of Kamala because it wasn't going to be productive.
Well, I mean, smart guy. He's probably time wasted before he's sick of it.
Cube has been spitting some truth lately, you know, like, people of color. Well, I don't care about no people of color. I care about black people, descendants of slaves.
Didn't Cube, like, he was doing some Kang's posting recently, and he had this, like, you know, egg tempura color deteriorated icon being carried by priests in Greece, and he's like, see? Because the Virgin Mother looks darkened because of the way that egg tempura paints age.
Well, checkmate, bigots. Jesus was black. The Egyptians were black. Greeks were black. The Irish were black. Everybody's black. We're all Kangs.
Well, considering, so again, I'm looking at this on this topic of the rappers and Trump and all that. Trump advisor Jared Kushner met with Jackson, Ice Cube, to discuss his plan and added some of Jackson's demands to President Trump's platinum plan, which I believe is that's the one where he wants to give, what, $500 billion to blacks? Well, I'm just going to officially declare Trump to be a faggot nigger. There you go, Trump. That's what you get to be.
Faggot nigger. I endorse. Instead of FTN, it's FNT.
Or maybe gay nigger would be better. Gay nigga from New York City.
Oh, man. But yeah, admittedly, there wasn't a whole lot to flesh out on this, right? Like, one, it's absolutely bizarre. It's bizarre to me, I guess, that these stoned, like, codeine-addled rappers, you know, are endorsing anybody. Frankly, they took just enough a moment away from, like, you know, day drinking and hoes, you know, to become involved in the political process at all.
Forget MAGA, we're MASA. Make Zizzerp get sipped again.
Nice.
Oh, show title.
We gotta keep Vampire Defamation League, but I sold that one from Minesweeper.
Minesweeper, you are a treasure.
Indeed. But yeah, the big takeaway from this, right, is like that, this is going to give basically the MAGAtards in my life, ammunition to say, like, oh, look, you know, he's going to get whatever the number is, 20%, 40% of the black vote, whatever it is they're claiming nowadays. You know, this gives them ammunition for that, which is frustrating for my personal life because, they don't want to talk about per capita or averages. And then secondly, there is an interesting admission in the article itself. So this gentleman, he goes on, he opines, and as I've stated before, the results of the election are dependent on white people, not us. I don't know, just the fact that even this, like, light-skinned idiot, this midwit, you know, can determine that, like, all of these rappers performatively endorsing the president, you know, wanting lower taxes, that it doesn't matter. Like, you know, they're just, they're not changing the voice of their own communities. And really, like, the election hinges on us. We're the only ones who actually, you know, change our minds or look at the issues and don't just simply vote as an unfeeling biomass.
I just want this election to be over. I want these terrible narratives and these terrible ideas to just be put to rest. I predicted people would start doing based Jared Kushner posting. I've seen it for myself. I'm tired of it all. I want it to end. Just bake me into the fucking pie already. I'm done.
Based Jared Kushner posting? Are you? Yeah. Oh my god.
Basically,
gosh.
The sentiments of people who were doing white nationalist talking points just 4 years ago during Trump's run up to the election, praising Jared Kushner and his Mideast plan and all that. And it's just, I'm just done. I'm just tired of everybody.
Some of y'all niggas don't make it.
Yeah, it's like it's true. You're not, and not everybody's gonna make it. And I'm just, And they're just Republicans. If you say stupid shit like that, you're just a Republican. And since being Republican is low status, well, that's your bed. You get to lie in it.
And you get to lie in that bed with Lil Wayne.
Yeah!
I believe that's Lil Jon.
Oh, fuck. Now I look stupid.
Now?
Oh.
I couldn't get my rapper straight.
I will say, you know, since we have exhausted, I think, most of the stuff we discussed, and if we just want to...
No, I have a good one. Don't forget, I have a really good story. This is going to bring the mood back up. I fled NYC amid COVID, and it was the worst decision of my life. In the New York Post. They took off in a hurry, but these news are on the express line back to the city. And this, going back, then we're... build the wall around New York City. You don't get to leave again. You tried. You don't get to leave New York City again. You're staying there. But they took off in a hurry, but these New Yorkers are on the express line back to the city. When the pandemic hit in March, Zachary Thatcher packed his suitcase and joined the record-breaking exodus of city folk living town. I was feeling cooped up and thought I wanted to have a more rural life that was more in tune with nature, said Thatcher, who gave up his one-bedroom apartment in West Village in April. I thought I wouldn't come back. Not all New Yorkers are cut out for country living. I was definitely not in farm shape when I got there, said Thatcher, who volunteered at a friend's organic farm for 4.5 months. And so, after testing out life in Massachusetts, Vermont, and Beacon, New York, Thatcher settled on Well, Brooklyn. I miss the diversity in my Jewish community, said Thatcher, who runs a digital marketing company. It's just so easy to walk places without having to plan things out. You can stumble upon bars, restaurants, and not be on a screen. It's not just the boonies that are turning off city slickers. New Yorkers have been snatching up real estate in the suburbs as well as smaller regional cities where they can get newly coveted amenities like outdoor space. I got a driveway, a yard, a washing machine, and an eat-in kitchen, said Maureen Cross, an accountant who earlier this year gave up her rent-controlled one-bedroom apartment on the Upper West Side. On June 1st, she signed a lease on a much bigger three-bedroom flat in Burlington, Vermont, where she moved with her two Siberian Huskies. After 2 weeks, I was like, is this all there is? Where is everybody? Cross was soon browsing Street Easy to move back to the West 80s from her new digs in the Stick and also scored a duplex of a backyard. She was happy to return to the churn of fast-paced city life and soon found herself back in her old routine of visiting museums, walking through Riverside Park, and volunteering with the Wild Bird Fund. I moved right back in time for the Met reopening, said Cross. When I walked into the room with the Jackson Pollock and Martha Rothko paintings, my cells fell back into place. Oh, God. Of course, not everyone can just pick up and move back to New York City. Earlier this year, Jen, who works for a radio station and declined to give her last name, moved out of her apartment on West 87th Street with her husband and two daughters, ages 4 and 8. When June came, I lost my mind and agreed to buy a pool that came with Albany, said the 44-year-old half jokingly. The former Upper West Sider said she misses everything about the city, but agreed to stay put considering her husband loves the burbs and her kids are thriving. Someday, when she and her husband are empty nesters, she hopes to return. I just can't believe that I have to wait that long, she said. Others have managed to hold on to their places in the city while they hide out elsewhere. Noelle, a 32-year-old commercial real estate developer, recently decamped to Whitefish, Montana, with her partner and their two young children. Thankfully, they still have the keys to their Gramercy place. I miss talking to the doorman in the morning when I walk my dog, said Noelle, who declined to give her last name for privacy. I miss going outside and being able to talk to people. While hiking, swimming, and sledding are nice, she said they hold the candle to visiting the Central Park with the kids or date night at Casa Mano, one of her favorite neighborhood restaurants. Even her toddler can't wait to return to his cosmopolitan routine. Said Noelle, my mom looked at me one day and said, Mommy, I miss sushi. Sushi is vinegar. It's for rice and fish. You can easily make it yourself. You might not be able to find the seaweed. Okay, I'll grant you, the seaweed might be a little bit harder, but you can... Look, sushi bite is the chicken bullet. McNuggets of Japanese cuisine. It's not that hard to make.
It's like, all you need to do is bite the bullet and go to the Asian grocery store. They will have sushi, I promise.
Yeah. Oh my God, the camps were awful. They didn't have sushi. They made me live out in Vermont, and there wasn't a single Rothko painting around. It was worse. It was worse than the Shoah.
Whitefish will change to gefilte fish.
But I mean, yeah, the big takeaway I'm just taking from this is like, you know, just what awful, weird, sad lives do these people lead? You know, just remarking about like, on the one hand, like, oh, I've got more space and like, you know, my own amenities, like a washing machine and a driveway and, you know, a little bit of elbow room. And then, you know, in the same token, right, in the same breath saying like, oh, but I didn't feel at home. You know, I miss being crammed into my shoebox apartment. Like I don't understand.
I miss the pot. I miss the bugs.
Yeah. That's essentially what's going on, right? Like, you know, there's not even a single bug burger to be found in this, you know, in this rural hellhole. You know, oh God, what has my life come to?
But yeah, that's unfortunately this is a phenomenon we've been seeing, is that you have urbanites flooding into suburban and rural areas, and thankfully they seem to be getting. The good living is so antithetical to what they are that it's driving them back, which is, that's very good. We seriously need to wall a lot of the cities, not all the cities. Some of the cities we can preserve, but some of the cities need to be, they're beyond saving. They need to be completely walled off. But, the big concern is that they linger around. They linger around long enough that they can make changes and infect everything and ruin the place before they go back. That's a common phenomenon as well, is that they really are locusts. They will descend upon a place where people are minding their own business and trying to live their lives. They'll try and make all the changes to make it more like California and New York City. Then when they realize, like, oh, wait, I actually just hate all these people that live here. Now I'm going to go back to my horrible one-room apartment and eat my impossible burger. But the changes that they've left behind persist much longer and take a long time to correct, if they ever get corrected at all. And they also drive, and as Chestnut points out in the chat, they drive up the house prices too. They make it harder for everyone. And as Minesweeper points out, Nick Mason said, it's our job to make refugees from New York City and California feel as uncomfortable and as unwelcome as possible.
Well, apparently just like not having sushi is enough to like drive them from your midst.
But we must do more. We must have proactive discomfort.
Legally. Legally, in state sanctioned, of course.
It's totally legal to be a bad neighbor.
Just I have the solution.
Oh,
state mandated bacon on everything.
Yes.
if you see a New Yorker in your town, just walk behind them at a legally at the legal distance and just keep saying the word nigger over and over and over again.
Is it all right? Yeah, I've got my homework assignment, and I'm willing to do it.
I can't wait to hear how this one turns out.
Bad advice with Borzoi.
I like to do it to the underwater theme from Mario Brothers. Nigger, nigger, nigger. Nigger, nigger, nigger. Or that's the underground, not underwater.
Make white nationalism juvenile again.
Yes.
I'm willing and able. You know, I am here, Lord. Send me if that's our
if that is my calling.
Yeah,
I actually have nothing else now. I'm not even gonna go into this Jared Kushner stuff. So I'm tapped out of my stuff.
Yeah, as am I. The only thing I had was I was perusing more from that writer from my Root article about like. You know, referencing all the MAGA rappers who are endorsing Trump. It's not particularly pertinent, but it's really funny, at least in spurts. He wrote an article, and Frank, I put it in the chat. The title is just, "Why You, parentheses, yes, you, are broke as shit and will never, ever, ever be rich, so stop deluding yourself," explained. And really, this is...
This is like, you know, black for black. This is, you said this was Root?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
okay, here we go.
So my favorite, so what, it does reference some stats, right? Like about millionaires and blah, blah, blah. Like 12.9% of Asians were millionaires, 12.5% of whites. Hispanics and blacks, only 1.4% and 1.3% respectively. Like, again, one, you know, if only there's some kind of graph or bell curve, maybe that could explain that. Lumpenpearl, simulation, graph. But my favorite bit from this is it just says he's got this fictitious back and forth between himself and the reader where each paragraph heading is like a rhetorical question from the reader. He says, that can't be right. What about LeBron and Oprah and Jeezy? To which he responds with all the vocabulary he can muster. That's three niggas out of 40 million. And none of them even shop at the same supermarkets you broke ass do. He then goes on to say, wait, the rich have special supermarkets? to which he responds in voice, that you'd even ask is the proof of your, and I'm directly quoting, your richlessness. Anyways.
so he like derailed himself in his fictional conversation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he
that sounds
did.
Like what did that just happen there?
I don't know, man. Cut him some slack. He could be suffering from, like, you know, a fever dream from an untreated spider bite.
Very true.
Yeah, and I was going to say, the headshot of this gentleman, you know, it only shows his head. So if he's missing any limbs, you know, I can neither confirm nor deny.
Yeah. I can't be so quick to judge.
Well, I mean, I am, but yeah, I was going to say that's, you know, that was admittedly a touch shit posty, and that's all the prep I'd exhausted. Dark, did you have anything left in the hopper?
No, sir.
All right. And Nico, what about you?
There's a lot of, because I decided to do some more research, there's a lot of, I found at least two more Holocaust novels that incorporate vampires into it.
Really?
One way or the other.
From different authors?
Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah, dude, let's delve into that a little bit. Yeah, it is spooky season. Let's get more vampires.
A Holocaust novel with fangs. It's hard to pick up a novel these days about encountering vampires and zombies. Even the classics, Pride and Prejudice, are not immune from the craze. But there's one mode of storytelling from which, until recently, imaginary monsters were conspicuously missing: the Holocaust novel. Not anymore. Add to your bookshelf's undead section The Color of Light, Helen Merrill's Shankman's debut novel. This vampire tale is set in an art school that closely resembles the New York Academy of Art, which just happens to be Shankman's alma mater. There, the pale, mysterious, and independently wealthy headmaster Raphael is often mistaken for a vampire. Or maybe it's not a mistake at all. But Raphael has a bigger secret. One of his students, Tessa, makes portraits that resemble a woman he cared about who perished in the Holocaust. Look for the connection between Tessa and his lost love, Raphael, gets closer to the young painter than he intends. The prose can be overindulgent, and the story takes its time leaving the station, but once it gets going, The Color of Light weaves a love story that will leave your mouth hanging open and possibly your fangs showing.
Yeah, I doubt it.
This was interesting. So there's this other novel called The Storyteller by Jodi Picou. And it's not really about vampires, but I'll read like the... So Sage Singer is a baker, a loner, until she befriends an old man who's particularly beloved in her community. Joseph Weber is everyone's favorite retired teacher and Little League coach. One day he asks Sage for a favor, to kill him. Shocked, Sage refuses, and then he confesses his darkest secret. He deserves to die because he had been a Nazi SS guard. And Sage's grandmother is a Holocaust survivor. How do you react to evil living next door? Can someone who's committed truly heinous acts ever atone with subsequent good behavior? Should you offer forgiveness to someone who, if you aren't the party who was wronged? And if Sage even considers the request, is it revenge or justice?
Wow, that is so gay. It's like this Jew wrote a book about this Nazi who feels like, I just need a Jew to kill me. That'll make up for everything I've done.
This led me to an article from 2013 by, people might be familiar with the name, by Batya Ungar Sargon. Jodi Picou's Holocaust Vampires. The conventions, I'm just going to kind of skip around a little bit. The conventions of Holocaust fiction, brutality, sexual abuse, forced labor, tellingly overlap with other sensationalist conventions. The young adult genre, the Jodi Picoult novel. It's great material for art, says Joseph Skibel, a novelist whose book, A Blessing on the Moon, is Holocaust fiction. It's writ large with big questions like good versus evil. Without subjects like war, all you have is the mundane. It's why so much American fiction is about white men committing adultery, Skibel adds wryly. No, that's... Okay, first of all, Skibel's stealing a line that... I forget who originally coined the line. It's about... That line's about writing what you know, and that's why a lot of fiction by English professors is about English professors committing adultery. So, but second of all, if you look at the names of a lot of what's considered, you know, literature and fiction in the United States, they're not white. They're not actually white. While Skibel remembers a time when there was what he called a prohibition against Holocaust fiction, and his own book was barred from the Holocaust Museum's bookstore, Holocaust fiction is now a staple in bookstores with its own category on Amazon.
Always was.
But it's still worth asking, since others undoubtedly will, whether the Holocaust should be treated as fodder for a best-selling thriller like Picoult's. I tend to be persuaded by the argument that makes sense of fictionalizing. David Mickens, a professor of English at the University of Houston, told me on the phone, "Everything is legitimate, if it helps you understand," he said, with the caveat that mythologizing can obscure reality in a problematic way.
You know what to say!
Ruth Franklin, who has written about the question of art and the Holocaust in her book A Thousand Darknesses, Lies and Truth in Holocaust Fiction, also disagrees with those who wish to remove Holocaust from the grasp of art. "I don't think it's our job to tell people what to write about," she told me on the phone. Furthermore, she believes it's not the artist's obligation to be a historian. That's the historian's job. To question whether a work of art exploits the Holocaust is, for Franklin, to question the artist's intent, which is not as interesting or important as questioning the work of art, which must be evaluated on its own terms. Artists have to cover costs, she says, about Holocaust films that make money, like Roberto Benigni's Life is Beautiful, which Franklin says has a legitimate aesthetic claim to the title of art. But there are those who think that there is something that distinguishes the Holocaust from other bloody historical events, like the American Civil War. Deborah Lipstadt, the author of the books Denying the Holocaust and Next Book Press's The Eichmann Trial, felt that Benigni's film was a mistake. "I hated Life is Beautiful," she told me. "It just made light of the whole thing." Lipstadt believes that when writing about genocide, slavery, and the Holocaust, the writer has a certain obligation not to play too fast with the truth. "Of course, fiction is fiction," she conceded. "But when dealing with these topics, it is important to make sure that fiction does not distort history." Alvin Rosenfeld, director of the Institute for the Study of Contemporary Antisemitism. Oh, I believe that's my institute.
Yes.
And a professor of Jewish studies at Indiana University, has written a book called A Double Dying, Reflections on Holocaust Literature. He, too, believes that Holocaust literature falls into two categories, the insightful, which includes The Last of the Just by Andre Schwarzbart, and The Reader by Bernard Schlink, and the works of 2002 Nobel laureate Imre Kertész, and the distorting, including William Styron's Sophie's Choice, with its portrayal of a Polish woman and Auschwitz survivor who is victimized by her rough and vulgar Jewish boyfriend, and Life is Beautiful, the fable at the heart of which bears no relationship to the camps. Notice, by the way, that the people who are acceptable Holocaust literature are definitely Jews, and those who are unacceptable are basically Gentiles trying to get in on the Holocaust game.
It's just a coincidence, right?
Yep. While he firmly believes that no one should legislate what any artist produces, he thinks that the audiences must learn to read and view critically. "You should think as well as feel," he told me. "Since the Holocaust is a crime of such horrific dimensions, one shouldn't want to see it commercialized or trivialized. The past is not fixed, and one doesn't want to lose the historical veracity." All these experts seem to agree that distortion or sensationalizing should be the barrier standing between an author and the Holocaust as setting. But another threat looms in the nature of storytelling itself. It lends closure. Adorno famously said that there is no poetry after Auschwitz, but this might very well apply as well to fiction, and in particular, Holocaust fiction. The bugbear that aspiring Holocaust novelists should fear is not sensationalism, but the inherently tempting but ahistorical comforts of resolution. Oh, you can't resolve the Holocaust, Goy! That's no resolution.
Yeah, Holocaust fiction today, Holocaust fiction tomorrow, Holocaust fiction forever.
It was also God. Holocaust fiction yesterday.
Yes.
Pico's success comes from addressing these narrative concerns overtly, for the storyteller is no less about the nature of fiction than it is about the Holocaust. One third of the novel gives readers the chance to inhabit the day, the life, the thoughts of a Nazi officer in situ, who, like every Pico character, is a damn good storyteller. Her skillful prose ennobles abjection even as it brings atrocity close to home. Not so close as The Shock, mind you, but close enough to reveal a shift in what sort of narratives can be told about the Holocaust. Another one of the characters tells a story about vampires, which is woven in with the three narratives, making the comparison of young adult novels and Holocaust fiction explicit. The vampiric tale, with its guts and its gore, is love plot and its aggressive sensuality, which the character must keep telling as a means to survival, throws into stark relief the Holocaust tale, denuding the latter of its usual effects by appropriating them and outdoing them. What's most shocking about the storyteller is its unexpected power as a meditation on the power of fiction as a means of facilitating an escape route from the banality of binaries, good versus evil, victim versus perpetrator, Nazi versus Jew. Pico wanted to understand more than she wanted to judge, and in doing so, she refuses the easy closure offered by narrative and shows us how using the Holocaust as a subject for popular fiction, even vampire fiction, is not to be feared.
There's a lot to unpack there. They talk about, like, binaries, right? Like, I thought that was the whole point of you know, that historical narrative, right? To create a binary, good and bad, and I don't understand what they're driving at here.
I have one more, and I definitely have to read this one. Also from
Kyle. Oh, fire away, man.
A Jewish Vampire Story by Vladislav David Zahn. It's like he couldn't tell if he wanted to be called David or Zion, so he just mashed the two together.
I also like the title of this one, right? Because it's like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know exactly from the headline what you're getting into.
Oh, you don't know what you're getting into. Perched next to a slumbering cat on a wooden bench under the pristine white walls of the Lilliputian Etz Chaim Synagogue in Crete's old Venetian port town of Chania would be the last place... Oh, this is Greek. This is going to be near and dear to your heart, Nike.
Yeah.
Would be the last place I would expect to run into an acquaintance, certainly of the vampiric kind. Yet here was my... etiolated Brazilian pal Francisco, slender, bespectacled, and no less feckless than the last time I had seen him in Odessa. He was an exquisitely wan representative of the saddest and most mundane specimen of our tribe, the blocked Luftmensch, the nebbishy writer who cannot write and founds a kingdom of self-pity to explain the reasons why. The pallid Francisco was a marginal figure of the sort who ensured the inner workings of a bureaucracy straight out of a Kafka tale. He had worked in the Brazilian embassy of the Romanian capital, Bucharest, by night translating minor modernist poets from the Romanian to Portuguese. He was one of those who would arrive in Odessa without understanding why, driven half by a triacally slavish sense of literature and half by an ambivalent attachment to his ancestry. I had once commissioned Francisco to write an article about the Brazilian king's 19th century visit to Odessa, a seminal event now forgotten. The last time I had seen him 3 years ago, we were having lunch in Odessa, and I asked him whether he was interested in Gershom Luka, the Jewish Romanian surrealist author of the Dadaist classic The Passive Vampire. Patron saint of the minor literati who leap off Parisian bridges. Francisco had lit up with sublime joy and informed me of his years-long obsession with Luca. I immediately instructed him to write a book on the fantastical interwar theorist of the objectively offered object, an object that is bestowed only after having been stripped of its objective erotic character. A quirky biography, preferably, but a novel would do also. Surely the striking similarities between the two high-strung figures was the excellent material for what we now refer to as autobiographical metafiction. 3 years later, Francisco seems diffident and shy as usual, but I sensed immediately that he was more than unusually sorrowful. What was the source of his current trouble? I was born, he told me with a rueful smile. He related to me his anguished sense of being lost, not knowing where he would go next or what he would do. I reiterated my practical advice of 3 years ago that he write the great Brazilian, Romanian, gay, surrealist, Jewish vampire novel.
What?
What? So he comes up to this dude. He's like, he's some like international refugee, like sad boy, and he tells him to write. But how many adjectives were in there? Five, six, seven. Brazilian, gay, surrealist, Romanian. Like, There's a lot going on.
This article is so horrible. I don't even know what the point of it is, so I'm just going to skip to this part. So I began to throttle Francisco brutally and to choke him mercilessly. I lowered my shoulder and rammed it into his chest at full strength, and picking him up by the waist, I flipped him over and pinned him to the rocks under the waves, howling at him that he needed to write the great Brazilian, Romanian, gay, surrealist, Jewish vampire novel, or that I would kill him. He was petrified, but also visibly thrilled that he felt some vitality for the first time in years. I began to push him under the water and to drown him, pushing his head under the water three times like it was a mikvah. I would purify him of the filth, I told him, and held his head under the water as he groveled for me to cease. Vlad, Vlad, he cried, you are drowning me. I am dying. But he did not resist, and I could have easily drowned him. I briefly contemplated finishing him off, but decided not to do it. I wanted to transfer a part of my life force into him by force. I am drowning. I will die here, he begged me. You are dead already, Mamzer, I howled, and lifted him up over the waves where he lost consciousness, and commanded him to either walk on water like Christ or to stay under the waves. Will you write the great Brazilian, Romanian, gay, surrealist, Jewish vampire novel, or do I have to kill you now, I demanded. But who will read it, he gurgled. Only 87 people will, but that does not matter. That does not particularly matter, I told him.
What the fuck?
These are
totally stable people that everyone should listen to and should totally be the ruling class of our society, and we should absolutely be comfortable with people who come up with the idea of a gay, surrealist, Brazilian, Romanian novel in charge of our literary society.
This is the real horror story that we have to live with these people. This is the intolerable Halloween.
I mean, I guess I can sympathize with, you know, with this guy in one regard, right? Like, basically, one fella is, you know, threatening violence against him and telling him to create more content. So, in that small way, I can sympathize.
Ted Nushen, could you repeat that? Ome wa mo shinderu. Shinderu. You are already dead.
Damn, I can't believe Titus didn't write this.
No, this sounds like
how you know you're in Clown World, Piss Earth is the absolute limits of the most insightful parodists on our side, and the reality of what they produce are indistinguishable.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
I'm looking at some of his art that Vladislav Davidzon is a Russian-American writer, translator, and critic. He is the chief editor of the Odessa Review and a non-resident fellow at the Atlantic Council. He was born in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, and lives in Paris. One of his articles is called 3,000 Hasidic Cossacks Congregate on Ukrainian Border.
That sounds like a contradiction.
It's like too many countries that shouldn't have anything to do with each other. He's fucking born in Tashkent. What the fuck?
Turning Baba Yar into Holocaust Disneyland.
What?
All right, I'm interested now.
The arc of history bends from Ukraine to Israel and back again.
Bruh.
Good God.
Sounds like a parody of Ram Ranch.
Gay communist Yiddish utopia.
No.
Dude, are you
we're not doing that.
Are you sure this isn't just like the Oven Men, right? Like the fever dream of failed skits that they wrote off for like an Oven Men bit, and they just like, I don't know, they try to monetize it by just sending it to these writers.
Yeah, no.
Because that's what this sounds like.
Like one of the Oven Men actually was able to be hacked by Mossad. And they were able to access all of these unreleased files and give them to Jewish authors to, you know, make free money.
Gene stealing and article stealing.
Fucking Jews, give me my content back.
Oh, man. But, but anyway, Borzoi, I think I interrupted you.
No, I'm just looking at this Holocaust Disneyland article right now.
To clarify, is it supposed to be like fun or
Yeah.
this is a bunch of stuff that's very inside baseball stuff that I don't really understand, so without having to dig into it, so I'm just not gonna bother. Let me look at this 3,000 Hasidic Cossacks congregate on the Ukrainian border. Is Rebbe Nachman playing a practical joke from beyond the grave, or is this Eastern Europe's version of normal during a pandemic, and who paid for the shirts?
What? The last part. Last part's a little bit of a non sequitur.
Last Thursday, a truly surreal video appeared on social media. Several dozen Hasidim dressed up in traditional Ukrainian folk costumes in order to serenade the Ukrainians into offering them entry. Looking fabulous in billowy white shirts and blue sashes over the bright red trousers of Ukrainian Cossacks, the Hasids performed a shortened version of the Ukrainian national anthem in a rather minor, mournful key.
So, hello, my fellow Ukrainians.
One of them strummed the guitar while singing the words of the Ukrainian national anthem with a charming, lilting accent. The rendition was surprisingly melancholic and moving. They concluded the song by offering up thanks to Ukraine and Ukraine's Jewish president, Volodymyr Zelensky, personally. Glory to Ukraine, they exclaim in unison at the end of the video, with likely no understanding of the historical provenance of the phrase.
Bruh.
Yeah, these, I don't know, man. I guess if we thought that the ones in charge of Zog were a little bit like unhinged and weird and crazy, like, good God, I guess like the Lumpenpearl tribesmen are like even weirder and more unhinged than I realized. Like the ones who are in charge of us, I guess, are the ones who could like keep their shit together comparatively.
So basically what happened, it seems, is that these Hasidic Jews were stuck on the border between Ukraine and Belarus, so they dressed up as Ukrainian Cossacks to try to get the Ukrainians to let them in.
What is wrong with these people, man? It's like this convoluted shit.
Can someone unplug the simulation and plug it back in?
Don't plug it back in, whatever you do!
Oh, yeah, to quote from the chat, sorry, simulation machine broke.
I guess we got breaking news on the situation in France. An Orthodox priest shot in France in Greek church, according to Bas von Bismarck.
Yeah, I saw that, and I'm not legally allowed to comment.
Well, you know, obviously my condolences.
Yeah, and I assume Louis the perpetrator
is unhappy.
I assume the perpetrator was a Scots-Irish Protestant.
Yeah. And yeah, Ulster nationalist in Lyon, France, shoots Greek Orthodox priest.
Yeah, wearing orange. Wearing orange, screaming, "No Pope in Rome." Yeah.
All right.
I think we're at the end here. We hit 2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. I was about to, you stole the words right out of my mouth. Yeah, so thank you to all the live listeners, and you know, hope y'all have a happy Halloween. Don't get up to anything too crazy, but yeah, let's sound off.
Well, we got our plugs here. If you want more spooky Halloween content, there is the top 10 Halloween movies pause button that Alex and
excellent
I did.
Show.
That's on the website. If you want some family content, I was recently on Full House. It was on the last episode. And, yeah, that's all I got to plug.
All right. And, Dark, what you got for us, man?
Stay away from demons, fam.
Wise advice, as always. You know, maybe, you know, daily exorcism might be part of our new shtick. All right. And then, Nike, what you got for us, man?
Listen to the Young Whites, TYH, on the right stuff, .biz. HH.
Indeed, Borther.
Zeke Hollow, right. Borther's HH.
All right, and then as always, thanks to TV's Frank for working everything behind the scenes. And I don't have anything to plug other than just to encourage everybody to go to church.
But first, party at Frank's house.
Yeah, it's going to be a pop and block party, is what I heard. But it's BYOC, bring your own codeine. yeah, so thank you to everybody who's listening, and thank you to the live audience, and as always, if you happen to have a friend named Kyle, make sure you see him a few times this weekend.
I think that's supposed to be going out. I don't know what's going to happen right now.
Yeah. Oh, hey, yeah, Frank, if we could cut it.
Did we lose Frank again?
Oh, okay.
Oh, he passed out.
Ah, son of a bitch.
Got two turns.
All right.
let me see if I can get into is D Live. At least this time we're just on D Live. We're not doing the same. Made the same mistake we made before, where we were out on YouTube, but the D Live was still going.
Yeah.
Hopefully he just went to the bathroom or something.
Well, one can hope. I guess the
with the spooky music still playing. This is the podcast that never ends. You're trapped. We're all haunted.
Yeah.
No, he's metaphorically he took a cue from that one fella who held the other guy underwater, yelling at him to make more content. I think he's trying to give us that signal, right? He's trying to tell us unsubtly, like, no, you must make more content.
All right. Well, I gotta go, fellas. You have a good one.
All right.
Happy Halloween to all of you.
All right. Take it easy, Dart.
I'm messaging Frank. I'll stick around with the chat until I can figure out how to end the stream, because I gotta get his login for. He sent me the login before. Hopefully, he didn't change it.
Have a nice Halloween, guys.
All right, back at you.
Thanks, bro. See you. We'll be right back.